Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfectly Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Hi there.
And Chris Casso.
Hello.
I started to say something else, then I remembered what your name was.
That's okay.
My brain is kind of broken. I'm still kind of recovering from this cold, and I'm still trying to remember that.
You've been sick for a long time.
We all have a tendency to be sick for several weeks.
Don't come to Seattle. Captain Trips is here.
The weather has turned, and so it's catching on. And I'm still trying to remember the name of that comic, but it'll never come back at this point.
It's an omnibus.
Oh, that narrows.
Why should not be an omnibus?
Yeah, it'll just be some collection.
Just be some sort of trade.
Yeah.
All right. And speaking of things, Chris, you have a triple changer at the desk here.
Yeah.
And this is one that I just sent mine. In a picture.
I had a different guy. I had Astro Train.
Yeah, you had.
And then you're like, oh, I had one too. And I said, like, that's the one I didn't have. Now I have the new version of Octane. Although they changed his name to Oct One. And screw that. He's Octane. And he's pretty cool. Although his plane mode has like these weird trucky things. And
yeah, the fuselage doesn't line up with the
cockpit. Did you guys clarify that you're talking about Transformers?
Oh, yeah. Transformer toy. There's a picture on Facebook. You could find it. Yeah,
but it's on Cole's page. And unless you're a friend of Cole.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody should be.
Go be friends with Cole.
Go be friends with Cole. And then look at this picture of Chris.
Yes.
Did you have to put the decals on?
No, he came with decals. That?
Okay, because he's got these wonderful little strips on the side.
Good color coordination.
And they're,
and they're chromium.
Decepticons tend to have the best color coordination.
It's good.
They're fashionable.
Yes, they do.
And I mean, like, I will always be the bigger fan of the Gen 1 Transformers, because those are the Transformers that I grew up with. But I do appreciate the fact, and we talked about this earlier, that these Transformers have very little not removable parts, but
extra doodads.
Yeah, unsecured parts. Because my Octane has like the tail fin is a separate thing. The wings I remember are connected, but the tanker part of the truck is a separate unit. So just more things to lose when
easy
you're
easy to lose. That way you have to buy more.
Yeah, or I should just sell mine on eBay and make a little bit extra money.
Yeah.
All right, I will never do that. Hey, so recently I came across a picture on the internets of a fella's dog who had destroyed some of his X-Men. And I didn't really know if these were valued X-Men, if this dog just destroyed like hundreds of dollars worth of comics. But it's annoying. You don't want your beloved pet to do something like that, because you don't want to have reasons to hate your pet. And I'm pretty sure that this is not the first time somebody's dear beloved dog has destroyed a comic or an heirloom
or
of some sort.
A cup of coffee has
or
destroyed something. Yeah.
So, that got me thinking of the unfortunate death of comics. And this isn't like a character dying in a trade. This is basically the comics themselves being destroyed. And the most famous story that I can remember is a struggling visual artist finding a bunch of issue ones in a dumpster and making a very terrible paper mache statue out of the pages.
British or Scottish artist, somewhere in the UK.
It was over there somewhere.
Over there somewhere.
Because he was skip diving. And people don't skip dive over here. They dumpster dive.
And it was like a UK edition of Avengers 1 or 2 or something like that.
Yeah, we had talked about it on a previous podcast, but it's probably been like a year and a half or something.
No, this happened like... No, it was not good.
Yeah,
his name
is Andrew Vickers, and the comics, he says he unwittingly made it using rare comics worth £20,000, about $40,000. At one expert who realized the artist's goof said that the sculpture would have been cheaper to make if Mr. Vickers had cast it out of Italian marble. I love that. So that got me thinking about other ways comics have been unceremoniously destroyed. Does anybody have any stories of the ways comics have been unceremoniously destroyed?
Oh, I've got a bunch of them.
All right.
Are you talking personal anecdotes, or are you talking...
Or I mean, I didn't get anything personal. I just looked up a story on the internet.
Because didn't we spend some time about a year or so back talking about pulping? And when they pulp comics,
we did that.
Yeah.
But this is more of unfortunate stupidity
series
stuff.
Well, I've got a terrible one, so.
Okay. Do you want to go?
Yeah, I think I may have told us. When I was living in Madison, Wisconsin, in about the late, it was like the late 90s, my girlfriend and I at the time were sharing, we all, we lived in an apartment house. And there were four, it was like an old manor house, like a lot of these places on the Isthmus in Madison. And our dear friends, Bobby and Sarah, lived upstairs. But there was an apartment that sort of abutted our or overlapped ours on the top, on the second floor. And this couple were out of control alcoholics, and they set their apartment on fire. And we,
like you do.
And I had, I had resigned to be living in Madison, so I had my father ship all my comics, and I didn't have that big a collection compared to now. Oh, dear.
You mean your father didn't ship an entire room full of long boxes?
No, no. And that's another story for another day, but I actually lost several boxes in shipping, which is tragic. But there was a fire, and the water damage came. The water came down into the apartment in the living room, and I was a nook where I had about 20 boxes. Boxes, 20 long boxes, in an alcove or a cubby, a doorless closet, and every one of those boxes was awash with filthy water. And here's the miraculous thing: every one of those comics was in a bag. So there were a handful of comics that were either not in bags or the bags were not well sealed that were destroyed. And I'm actually now finding some of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I came across a couple of them that because. All the boxes were destroyed, the cardboard boxes were destroyed, and I replaced all those with our renter's insurance, and there was this great sigh of relief. But I tell you, when you're standing outside your home and watching all of your worldly possessions, and the flames were just going up and up and up, and you know,
the water's just coming down.
See, because we were standing on the sidewalk, so we couldn't see where our unit was on the ground floor, and whether it was being, all we could see were the flames, and I remember my girlfriend and I resigning ourselves to what we're going to do with our lives if we lost all of our worldly possessions, because I would not be at this table if all those things were destroyed. We would not be doing this because I would not be collecting comic books anymore. Mm-hmm. But as it stood, all the comics were replaced except for like a smidgen of them that were destroyed from the water. But beside that, but I tell you that took years off my life when I was standing there.
I bet.
It also takes years off your life when you're going through this revelatory moment where you're like, okay, now I am looking down the barrel at a major life transition. That transition didn't really come, but it's often, I do ponder it. So yeah, that's the scariest thing.
All the elements against you.
Yeah.
It's a good life lesson. Bag and board your stuff, people.
Because I took pictures of all the damaged boxes and I wanted to send them to the companies that made the protective bags and stuff and say, look here, look, this works.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Chris? You said you had a story.
So I have a lot of like stories through the store, and the oldest one I could think of was at the previous store I used to work at. We had a guy come in and he brought in the very first issue of Playboy, and he found it inside the wall of a place that he was working on. And so just somebody hiding Playboys in the walls is kind of funny.
Probably a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah. But they only discovered it because he nailed right through it with like a power gun or something. So perfectly look good copy with a big old hole in the center. Just like, oh, that's sad.
Do you remember the story from like 4 or 5 years ago where the people were renovating this house and they tore out the wall and they tore out the drywall and there were early copies of Action Comics?
Yes, I was going to bring that up.
And then the couple were divorcing and they proceeded to start fighting over it because they knew it was valuable. They just didn't know how valuable. And it was destroyed because they were fighting over it. They got torn.
Like physically were fighting over it?
See, I didn't hear that it was a divorce in play. I just heard that like the wife wanted to see it and he's just like, well, no.
No, don't touch it.
And then she was like, well, give it here, you know, and she got like the back cover and tore it. But maybe there was a divorce in play.
I remember them being,
they were not happy with each other.
That is clear.
But But at that time period, people stuffed those things in the wall for insulation.
Right.
And so who knows? It's
probably cheaper than actual insulation.
Yeah,
back
precisely.
Then,
yeah. And there have, I've heard countless stories of people finding, like, you know, Depression era movie posters and things like that that have been stuffed in the walls as insulation. So I like the idea that somewhere out there there are copies of, you know, vintage comic books, probably not in that great a shape because they've been subjected to the elements of one way or another.
Yeah, yeah. In 50 years, people are going to be opening up houses from today and finding posters of The Hangover. Do you have any, do you have any stories, Nicole?
None that I could think of that were like that epic, you know, because it's just been like little things that people have had to replace issues here and there because of just accidents. But
yeah,
I'm sure Chris has a few more he could probably give.
On the personal level, at one point I moved into a place that had like a detached garage, and that was the only place I could put my collection. And it was a crappy little detached garage, and a family of raccoons started to live in there, and as well as the occasional possum and other creatures. That's me merging those. And they mostly didn't eat my comics.
Mostly
didn't them.
Yeah. So.
Did you replace those comics,
no,
or did you just get
really.
Rid of
I just
them?
Let them go because that was at the height of my collection, and I had a lot of crap in that collection. So it's just like, you guys needed it more than I did at that point in time. But they were actually pretty mindful. They didn't get into any of the valuable boxes.
Oh,
so.
Good. Just they spawns. Understood.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Or your spawns and young
I will never not appreciate your hatred for Spawn. Cool. Have you ever had anybody come into the store and try to pawn off some really damaged comics?
Oh, yeah.
Try to tell you that they're worth something?
All the time.
All the time. Yeah. A daily occurrence around here.
Sometimes people don't actually think they're that bad a shape.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of tough to read them sometimes. But the one that always killed me was there was a guy and he had a bunch of like pretty valuable, good looking stuff. That were a little worn, but then he wouldn't stop, like, he wouldn't just let me look at the collection. He had to hand everyone, and he had to, like, talk about them and hold them, and he manhandled them in the worst way possible. So I saw a book that was obviously like, oh, that's worth at least a couple hundred, turn into a $50 book in his hands.
No way.
Just because he was just that. He just didn't care what he was doing, and he was just a rough person. And I was just like, let it go.
I have noticed that even with people with modern comics, people who are particular, and then I see them manhandle them, like they like crunch them, and I'm like,
but you were particular.
Care, but you're particular, and yet you're crunching them. So that's a weird thing.
I at least want people to be consistent. If you're going to be that anal retentive, to have your gloves and your microscope,
exactly.
And there's a lot of folks just think solely because they are old, they don't really grasp how comic book culture culture functions that way. And that's I've talked to lots of dealers who are very frustrated by that. They called. And someone has a list, and they get called to come and evaluate the collection, and these comics have been in an attic or in a garage, and they're sooty and dusty.
There's been some musty comics that have passed by, and I have some musty ones in my house, and I'll be reading them, and William's like, you're reading those old comics, aren't you? Those musty things.
I received a box of baseball cards from a friend of mine that were sitting in his basement for years, and I pulled them out, and it had that basement
stank.
Musty smell. I had to let them like air out for a while. Just put them on the counter
for like a year or two.
Well, I mean, it took me a while to get around to them. So if they were out for a couple months,
I get all kind of oogie about that. It's like, what if this is like some type of dangerous mold that's like got Legionnaire's disease?
I know. Fine. Yeah. It's our time.
Like when I,
man, you are terrible.
When I get cards from like the Valley Village or the Goodwill, I make sure to wash my hands after I go.
Why are you looking at me?
Because I got that habit. I learned it by watching you, sir.
I
never used to go to Goodwill or Valley Village to look for baseball cards, and now I do that all the time.
I thought you were going to accuse me of bringing you the filthy baseball cards from.
No.
You know what? That's just safe practices, right there. Especially when
safe collecting people.
When we're in a transition period in the fall and the spring times, you definitely want to double up on your hand washing.
You definitely do.
Yeah.
Okay. do we have any other stories about comic books or other collectibles that have met their unfortunate end?
No. No, I can't think of any right now.
I knew a gentleman who was an attorney back in Oregon, and he had his collection from the 60s. He had he and his brother had collected old Marvels, and he had early teens of Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, and whatnot. And they were in okay shape, but he was very cavalier about how he handled them. You know, he's pulling them out of the box, and they're not, some of them are bagged, some aren't. And he would show them to me and tell me about the stories and then fling them. Yeah. And I think he was doing it on purpose to make me cringe because he could, you know. And it's like he loved these comics, but they didn't have any, intrinsic value to him anymore. Right. He wasn't concerned about the value. But I was looking at some of these as historical artifacts in my mind, because I'm that kind of a nerd. But gee whiz, yeah, he would fling him like a frisbee over on the couch and stuff.
Yeah, my dad was a child of the 50s and had all the baseball cards, all the comic books, you know, the issue number ones, key issues. Even had, like, when he became a teenager, I had this cool old Thunderbird, and when he went to college, my grandfather sold all of that stuff without telling my dad. Uh-huh. And so I love my grandfather. I miss him every day, but I will never forgive him for that. Right. So let's move on. Let's move on to another segment that I'm going to call Recommendation Corner. And this is where I just finished watching a bunch of TV shows and I'm in the mood maybe to read comic books that are like those TV shows.
I have questions about your watch list, by the way.
Well, I have answers for you
when we get
to them.
Good. Okay.
So we don't need to spend too much time. Just I'm going to name a TV show, and if you have a comic to recommend to me, shout it out, okay? One is the classic HBO show The Wire.
Gotham Central.
Gotham Central. All right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Didn't they try to do that a TV series like that at one point?
I thought
point?
That's what Gotham was supposed to be initially.
Yeah, it's not. It's a WB take on DC reality.
Yeah.
All right. The next show on the list is the classic sitcom Cheers.
We had trouble with that one.
Yeah, because we were trying to think of what the core of Cheers is and what would be the equivalent. That's where I was thinking.
Right.
And
right.
It's like, so you're in one place, so it's all character driven.
Yeah.
And it's all building upon the relationships of these people and anecdotal things.
Quirky
so
characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You all come to meet at a particular place.
Archetypes, I'll say. Yeah. You have like the mailman, the drunk, you know, the dumb guy.
Yeah.
The doctor.
There's been a couple. There was I forget the name of it, but there was a comic book about superheroes all meeting in a bar after hours, and it never really took off.
Well, there was Shamrock. Is that her name? She had the bar, and there was a lot of things that happened there, but I don't remember where.
What
that was
the the DC supernatural team? It had Blue Devil.
Oh, Shadow.
Shadow Pact.
Pact.
Shadow Pact had a bar.
Okay.
It was a bar that only magical people could get into.
The Oblivion Bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was...
It actually just showed up this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And that was the best thing about the comic book. The plots were terrible, but they would... I loved it when they would go... Because it was neutral territory, too. So it'd be these other...
So heroes and villains would be able to sit and have a drink together. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was... That was kind of a cool aspect of the story. It didn't... I don't think I held on to those comics because the rest of the plots didn't work, but that was fun.
There was something at Marvel, I think it was like Sandman and somebody sat down and they...
Oh, there's the bar with no name.
Yeah.
And every universe has one of those, but Marvel's had it a couple times. And so like, the idea's there, but it's not a series for you to read.
Gotcha.
Yeah, there's like
bits and pieces. From Grimjack. Sure, London's bar.
Everybody's been there.
Everybody, even the Ninja Turtles have been there.
Yeah.
All right. We don't need to spend too much time on it. And
yeah, we do.
Cheers is on the list because my theater is producing an off-night show called Deers, where it's set in a bar, but all the patrons are animals. All right. The next show is the show about a serial killer who only kills serial killers, Dexter.
We both thought of Bedlam at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Bedlam. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that a similar story? Is that a...
It's more like a Joker archetype who gets healed and helps the police find other serial killers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So somewhat similar.
Didn't you guys review that at one point?
She did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds familiar. The name sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. I love Dexter. I just have one more season to go, but I'm on a bit of a hiatus.
Stop now.
No. Go all the way.
I'm
getting conflicting information.
No, don't watch the end. Remember how you felt about Lost?
I never watched Lost.
Oh.
All right, so so the next show is a favorite of mine, BoJack Horseman, about a former TV star who just really hates himself.
I liked Chris's answer.
So I would say The Howard the Duck by Chip Zdarsky. I know Cole doesn't care for it as much.
Didn't care for it.
But tonally, it matched perfectly for me.
Yeah, I can see that.
Anthropomorphic take, character who kind of has some self-loathing issues at times.
Yeah.
Dealing with other weird, quirky things happening around him at a weird pace.
Yeah.
It just kind of felt right. I couldn't quite think of anything else other than like Give You the Tick or something like that, but not even that.
What about Major Bummer? Because I haven't read that. Would that possibly be a thing?
It's almost on the verge there.
Yeah.
Doesn't like quite
elements,
match for me.
But
elements,
not,
yeah. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Thank you. And this next show is probably what you have a question about. It's not a show that I actually watch, but this show is recommended to me by a friend of mine who's like a mid-40s dude who works in tech, and he told me I should watch this show. It's iCarly.
So I thought Gem and the Holograms.
Okay.
Because they become internet sensations in the current iteration, and so do the Misfits. And so, okay. But it's not really dealing with fame. Because iCarly, I had to Wikipedia. I have seen an episode.
I've actually never seen it.
I've heard that it's quite fascinating show. I've never watched it either, but grown-ups.
Yeah.
Grown-ups who don't have kids have actually watched it and said it's fascinating because it's so successfully meta and self-reflective.
Yeah. So I don't know that Gem really encompasses that since I don't really have a good grasp of iCarly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a basic Google search, but.
Cool. All right. Well, your answer is accepted. Gem and the Holograms.
There you go.
Okay. So the next one is another favorite show of mine, Game of Thrones.
I'm going to go with Berserk because there's not that many fantasy comics that get that level of politics.
Yeah.
Really?
There's also the Game of Thrones comic, which is actually very disappointing.
I didn't even realize that they had one.
But what I will say is there's a series of comics based on short stories that George R. R. Martin did that are prequels, the Hedge Knight stories, which all take place 100 years before the events of Game of Thrones.
Really?
Those comics are actually really engaging to me.
Now, are they actual, like, in-universe for Game of Thrones? Mm-hmm.
Yep. They deal with, there's a knight of the Kingsguard, but this is before he became a legendary knight. And he took care of a prince, a Targaryen prince, when he was a child. And they wanted the prince to learn what the people live like. So he went out as a squire. And it's just following the adventures of Sir Duncan the Tall and Prince Aegon. And they were called Duncan Egg. And so you get like all this you know a lot of the houses, their familiar names.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. And this last show isn't a show that I watch, but it's a show my lady friend likes, and it's The Great British Baking Show. And I thought, because there's a lot of great cooking comics out there, which one would be the best comic to read after watching The Bake Off?
Space Battle Lunchtime.
There's also a manga called Food Wars, which is all about food competition, and it runs pretty long, actually.
Right.
So,
quite a bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. And that is the list. Thank you guys for indulging me.
You're welcome.
And having fun with Recommendation Corner. Now let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And Cole Hornaday, let's start with you.
Sure. Well, I picked up, this is from a couple of weeks back, but I picked up the Jack Kirby tribute comic. DC did a bunch of one-shots honoring Jack Kirby's 100th birthday. And this was in honor of Kirby and Simon's Sandman from 1974. And there are two stories done. One is written by Dan Jurgens and drawn by John Bogdanove. And then there's another by Steve Laiola. Did he write and illustrate it? Steve Orlando and Rick Leonardi. Do the other one. And they both are just these wonderful tributes to the original stories. Now, Kirby did a lot of these very short-lived series when he left Marvel and went back to DC that were him at the height of his creativity, but he had lost his audience momentum. I think the people that were reading these comics like Commandy and Sandman and sadly even the New Gods stories, they had that Kirby energy, but they just didn't find the audience they needed. And DC quickly, the romance was over before it had begun, really, with a lot of these books. And The Demon and things like that, too. This is a lovely tribute, and it does all the stories are in keeping with this particular Sandman universe, and his name, this was the, I'm trying to remember this character's name, Garrett Stanford. So this predates many, many decades before Neil Gaiman's take on Sandman, and actually Gaiman addresses this character in his comics in a very, very bizarro way. That we don't have enough time to talk about here, but this was it's $4.99 for one shot. There's two stories, and I think they're beautiful tributes to Kirby's stuff, and both of them are very self-reflexive and have Kirby as a persona in at least one of them reflected. And then in the back end are a series of very short one-off stories that were from the Cadmus Project stories that were originally in Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen back in the day. And it's one of those things where it's like you look at people paying homage to Kirby and then you look at the real Kirby and you go, oh, yeah, I see. Now I'm reminded of where all this came from, where all this creative energy is, and why it's still with us. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I didn't buy any of the other Kirby tribute books that came out this last month. There's a New Gods one. There's a Newsboy Legion, Manhunter,
Dark Side.
And then, of course, there's the travesty that they're calling the Commandy Challenge, which I'm reading monthly, and I don't want to talk about it. However, it did put me to the mind of who does good Kirby tributes, because there have been a lot of books over the years that have paid tribute. Like, there's Image's Godland that was really just all about being Kirby cosmic stories.
Right.
But, you know, I just said a snarky thing about the... actually, it wasn't snarky. It was downright rude. The Commandy Challenge... And there is one issue drawn by Steve Rude, which is this lovely amalgam of Kirby's inspiration and influence, and is also very Steve Rude.
Well, and the last issue might interest you when you catch up to it, because it's drawn by Kevin Eastman, and it's done in black and white, and it's a total tribute to Ninja Turtles.
Interesting. Yep. Okay. Well, I mean, I think I have that one on my stack. Yeah, so yeah. I enjoyed this a lot. It made me more nostalgic for Neil Gaiman's Sandman than it did for the Kirby, the Kirby Simon character. Yeah, it made me want to go back and read the stories where this stuff overlaps with how, because Gaiman incorporated it into his stories and sort of fleshed out. He joined the universes. He made it. He explained how this could exist. The Sandman could exist alongside his Sandman, and it was. Mm-hmm. I thought it was quite fascinating. Ultimately, leads to the climax of Gaiman's Sandman series too.
Did you enjoy the two-page splash collage?
Yeah, there's a lot of great things. One of the things that not a lot of people realize is that Kirby loved to do collages, and that every once in a while he would do all this, you know, clip art collages, and they would work beautifully with his stories. And yeah, that's one of the best things about it, is there's a splash page. It's all skulls and planets and
watermelon.
And watermelon and gorilla skulls. And yeah, it's it is fun. It is
everything
fun.
You wanted. Cool. Yeah. The Sandman. Thank you, Cole. Chris Casso, what do you got for us?
I read the first issue of a new Image series called The Realm by Seth M. Peck and Jeremy Hahn. It's a dystopian fantasy thriller. Basically, it's kind of a post-apocalyptic world. It kind of reminds me of, what was that show, Jeremiah? I think that kind of post-apocalyptic.
Well.
Yeah,
Jericho.
Jericho. Jericho and Jeremiah. There's two of them.
Oh, okay.
Is there?
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
maybe
Jericho was.
I'm mixing
and then
things
it became
up a bit.
A comic.
Yeah. Okay. But Jeremiah is a comic. Yeah. Okay. Jericho, I think, is what I meant to talk about. So that kind of world structure has fallen apart, but it's not Mad Max.
Gotcha.
But there's like floating things in the sky, and there's like horrible things people are trying to avoid, like maybe dragons, and later on you see like some hunters killing like goblins and orcs. So it looks like some sort of fantasy realm merged with a metropolitan city, and they turned it into that kind of Jericho-esque wasteland. And so it's following this character who's a mercenary who takes odd jobs to survive, and he's going to be taking a new job where some hunters want to take a couple scientists somewhere safe. So there's no real like hard plot set in motion. There's just slight character introductions and a taste of the world. It's interesting. It makes me kind of want to keep going and see where they're going with it. But it's also this kind of genre mashup I've seen a couple times, so it doesn't feel too fresh for me. And it feels like it's trying to become a TV show. Like, it's trying a little too hard. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but there's a certain point where if they don't fill in the plot and the characters a little bit more, it'll ring a little hollow to me, and it'll just seem like a attempt for a movie script.
Mm. I wonder how many comic pitches are that.
Oh, quite a lot. Yeah, I mean,
more than you know.
There was a publishing company. Yeah. There was an entire publishing company that was based on just absorbing scripts to become movies.
Really?
That in last week's episode, you talked about the
Radical.
Well, the Hercules movie.
Hercules. And,
yeah, Radical Comics.
Radical is. That's what they were.
It was like a zombie comic.
They did Hotwire, which is one of the series I really
liked. They did a lot, actually. They chugged out a lot.
Mm-hmm. They all were. It's all been optioned as TV series or films. So sidebar, so Jeremiah, the TV series, Showtime's TV series that was the Luke Perry vehicle.
Jericho.
Nope, it's Jeremiah.
Jeremiah.
It's based on the Herman Hoopman comic book series, Jeremiah, and it was adapted by J. Michael Straczynski.
Right.
That was
his
baby for a while. But I've watched a lot of those. And yeah, that's the world, that's the reality where all adults have died of the plague.
It's kind of, I haven't seen it, but there's a show called Shannara Chronicles, and I get the feeling that's what this is. Because I remember seeing in like the trailers for the Shannara Chronicles, like the Space Needle is in ruins and there's growth over it and stuff like that.
I thought the Shannara Chronicles were based on the Brook fantasy novels. I read the first one as a kid, and it was just exhausting.
I could be mixing another thing up here. There's so much of this stuff
You're
out there.
Thinking of James Cameron's Dark Angel, starring Jessica Alba, set in post-apocalyptic or post-breakdown Seattle. Nicole.
So speaking of breakdown.
Yeah.
I love those old shows where that shows you the urban decay.
Yes.
Are we done with the realm?
Yes. The realm is $3.99, and it was interesting.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
What do you got for us, Nicole?
So pure cyberpunk manga. Throughout working at the store, every once in a while, I get somebody coming in and asking about a manga called Blame with an exclamation point at the end. And I decided to get it from the library. Because I'm on a huge manga kick, and I don't want to spend all of my money on manga. And I'm also getting ready for a Cyberpunk 2020 campaign with my husband, so I thought that reading and consuming more cyberpunk material would be good. So I tried Blame, and it's by Tsutomu Nihei. I don't know if I'm saying that right. It's N-I-H-E-I. And it's pure cyberpunk in that it's some sort of reality where humans no longer like live on the ground, like the ground doesn't really exist. You like live in these tall buildings, and everybody's out for survival. There's this thing called the administration, which seems to be like AI gone awry. It's these robots that come in and try to destroy everything. And there's also seems to be some sort of human mutation that happened. There's a lot of cybernetic elements where a lot of people are like plugged in to different things and a lot of technology that way. There's like different factions of humans, and it's pure cyberpunk. So if you're in the mood for cyberpunk, this will definitely be something to check out. The art and the writing is all by the same person. And while the world building and the elements within that are interesting, it reads really fast. There's not a lot of heavy dialogue. And the action, there's a lot of action, but the action scenes are so murky that it's hard to tell what's happening. It's like, blam, 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 and then someone's like head's flying, and I'm like, what? I thought you had a gun, not a knife. You know, so it's like strange. And it looks like as you go through the series, the art gets a little stronger, so it might be one of those things, like, if you see somebody way back in the day, and then as they get through the volume, like, they build and refine. So I'm still working my way through it. It's a kind of chunky series, but a pretty quick read. And I don't know if I want to go all the way through. I kind of do, just because the elements that are there are really interesting to me, and it's pure cyberpunk. And in this day and age, we see a lot of things that are mixed genre, and they might have elements of something. But because this is such a pure form, it has me intrigued and to where it's going to go. And the fact that this main protagonist is also looking for something about, like, the genetics before this mutation, and I don't know what that means. Maybe that's the administration or something. So they just drop these little bits and pieces throughout it. So it's pretty interesting. If you're looking for that kind of thing, I think it's definitely something to check out, because I think it's one of those things people look for. And there's not too many things that are cyberpunk, like a pure cyberpunk, like. Mm-hmm. Steampunk is kind of one of those things. It's kind of a niche thing. I think cyberpunk tends to get roped in with dystopian elements. You know, like Blade Runner is this neo-noir that has elements that could also be used in cyberpunk, but it's not technically cyberpunk, you know? So I think it's interesting in that way. So definitely check out Blame. It is available through comic retailers as well, so you can support your local comic book store. And it's about the volumes that they have now are called the Master Editions, and they're about 300 pages, I think, per, and they're slightly oversized. So I think I'm getting that page count right. But they're $35 each, so they're a bit of an investment.
Right.
But I think that overall they're pretty worth it. If you can get past the art aspect, which sometimes can be a little difficult. I just go, "Yeah, okay, they're fighting," and then I move on. Right. Yeah.
Cool. All
so
right.
Blame.
Thank you, Nicole. And that is Book Report, and coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as the Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week, our questions come to us from Mr. Cole Hornaday. Lay it on us, Cole.
So the theme of this one was inspired by the book I actually reviewed this week, The Sandman. This pop quiz is entitled What Dreams May Come, a quiz time devoted to some of our favorite oneric. Oh, dear me.
Oh, you wrote yourself into a corner there.
Oneric, or relating to dreams, characters, and their ilk. So,
alrighty.
First one. Jack Kirby and Joe Simon's Sandman, Garrett Sanford, reluctantly kept these two living nightmares on reserve in bell jars in his dream dimension as an arsenal for times of dire need. Who were these nightmares?
Brute?
Brute was one.
Glob?
Brute and Glob.
Wow.
Kirby and Simon's Brute and Glob, Kirby and Simon's Sandman, first appeared in Sandman 1, published by DC in 1974. Wesley Dodds went from Golden Age superhero to retro noir crime detective in the 1990s. Before he made this transition, however, he, not unlike his Justice Society compatriots, was joined in his daily daring do by a sidekick. Name that spunky young assistant.
Sandy
the Golden Boy. Sanderson Sandy Hawkins first appeared in Adventure Comics number 69 in 1941. In the dream,
Sanderson Sandy Hawkins.
That's right.
Okay, just wanted to.
Hey, DC. Okay.
All I got to tell you is, all I have to say is 1941.
Sounds like a Stanley
well,
character.
Well, I think we can pull out 2000s somewhere, too.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, continue, okay. Sorry.
In the dreaming of Neil Simon.
Sorry. I threw you off the game there.
In the dreaming of Neil Gaiman's Sandman stories stood a library comprised of literary works written by and for dreamers, a place unknown to the waking world. Who was the librarian of this establishment?
It wasn't Kane, was it?
No.
No. Yeah.
Cain and Abel were House of Mystery, House of Secrets.
I just thought one of them double timed it. I can't remember.
You're close, though. Lucian, the head librarian, first appeared in Weird Mystery Tales 18, published in DC in May of 1975. So what I didn't realize and what I'm learning is a lot of these supporting characters in The Dreaming were actually older DC characters from their horror anthology books.
Well, that's cool to pull that kind of stuff in. Yeah.
Lucian was also the first crow. So remember, Matthew the Crow was the companion to Morpheus in the stories, but Lucian was the first crow, apparently. And supposedly also the first man. And I don't know if that means he was Adam. Moving on. Morpheus, a.k.a. Dream, had six immortal siblings known as the Endless, all characters with the names starting with the letter D. Who was the prodigal brother, often spoken of, but had vacated his responsibilities sometime in the 17th century and the onset of reason that he claimed ultimately led to the atom bomb? Nope.
Can't remember.
Destruction. The brother was Destruction, created by Neil Gaiman and Brian Talbot, first appeared in Sandman Special Number 1, November 1991. Lastly, this being is Marvel's own oniric supervillain. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Let's just say you are.
Okay. Yeah. Who rules from his own dream dimension, known and is known for tangling with Doctor Strange, Master of the Mystic Arts.
Nightmare.
Nightmare, created by Stan Lee and Steve.
Sorry, you tried. That's okay. A burp.
You know, you guys need to remember what your code is.
Well, he was like, you got this, Nicole. And I'm like, what do I got? Okay.
Nightmare first appeared in Strange Tales number 110 in July 1963.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Cole. And thank you all for listening. And we will see you next week. Mm-hmm.